Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Show. This is September the 5th, Friday. Always good to catch up with you at the end of the week and play a bit of catch-up. What a crazy week it has been. More wacky stuff going on where national security is concerned, where the administration is concerned, revelation after revelation. And we're going to look at all those issues this evening and try to put a perspective to it that you're probably not going to hear too many other places. Although I have to tell you, this past week I've done a bunch of radio programs. Yesterday I was on with Neil Cavuto over at the Fox Business Network. I've been doing appearances both on Newsmax TV, One American News Network, earlier today. So it's about getting information to the people out there so that you folks can then take the information and apply the appropriate pressure on these clowns, buffoons, and assorted crazy people, not only in Washington, but in city halls and state capitals around the country. We are in a very serious situation. The politicians keep on playing politics, and quite frankly, folks, they are playing politics with the lives of Americans, with the security and survival of America. It's got to stop. Business as usual isn't working. It isn't working. And the dangers this creates for us are inestimable as we approach the 13th anniversary of the worst terror attacks ever conducted, ever carried out on American soil. And those attacks were carried out because our government failed, and the failures that enabled those attacks have not been addressed except to make things infinitely more dangerous. This is insanity, and that's the reason for my program. Ever since 9/11, I have determined to be out there providing my perspectives based on my 30-year career with the former INS to educate. So rather than worry about who's going to win whatever athletic event, the World Series, whatever, this is the real game. It's the only game, and it's not a game. But this is where our attention needs to be focused, not distracted by foolishness. A couple of websites I very much want you to go visit. Please visit my own website, michaelcutler.net. I want you to go to capsweb.org, C-A-P-S, capsweb.org. I'm a senior fellow with CAPS. I've been writing for them for a whole bunch of years. I join a lot of other writers on that website. They've been hammering away at the issues. Interestingly, yesterday, in fact, Neil Cavuto raised an issue that cuts to one of the things that CAPS has been talking about, specifically in California, the massive influx of aliens, the impact on the economy of California, crazy Governor Jerry Brown, but he's not alone. We got a lot of wackaloons out there who can only do political math, but not real math. Their math is about votes. Their math is about political power. Their math is about political campaign contributions. Their math is about themselves. But what they don't understand is that if, God forbid, the unthinkable happens, they are not invulnerable. Their families are not invulnerable, and they don't want to overstate the problem. But that's why we're here, to look at the issues dispassionately and the facts. Not the lies, not the BS, not the propaganda, not the myths, and not the false accusations. We're going to cut to the chase, tell it the way it is, and I hope that you will all convey the information we provide here to your friends and neighbors. Ask them to go to the websites. Ask them to pay attention. Go to my podcast. Read my commentaries. Educate yourself. I'm not claiming I have all the answers. I don't. But immigration has been my life's work. I've been involved with the issue, it's hard to believe, almost 43 years, going back to October 1971 when I was sworn in as an immigration inspector at Kennedy International Airport here in New York City. In any event, we're going to look today at the threat of terrorism posed by ISIS. And, you know, while the politicians are out there banging on the podium and banging on their desks and thumping their chests, and the president needs to get tough, and we need to chase these bums to the gates of hell, and boy, it sounds great, and all this pumping up the message, we have to fight them over here also. The way you fight terrorists within your country, folks, is to identify people who have come to this country, who are engaged in illegal activity, and enforce the immigration laws. This isn't about a witch hunt. This is about enforcing very reasonable laws that are already on the books. This does not need reform. It needs enforcement. What they want to reform is to make it easier for foreign workers to come here. That's exactly what the politicians who talk about comprehensive immigration reform want. We need more foreign workers because God only knows those stupid Americans can't do the job. And quite frankly, we have a lot of stupid Americans because they elected those politicians and continue to reelect them. I want you to think about a disconnect that we keep hearing. Let's make this the starting point for this evening's conversation. We're being told that the American school system is incapable, utterly incapable, incompetent in cranking out the STEM people, science, technology, engineering, and math. We just can't do it. The schools are too screwed up, so we've got to import the best and brightest workers from around the world. And then we're told by the same politicians, with words coming out of their same lying mouths, that when foreign students study in America at what I presume are incompetent universities, now we need to give them green cards because God only knows they are now eminently qualified to do the jobs. Outrageous. Outrageous. But no one stops and says, wait a minute, there's a disconnect. No one saw the disconnect between Bloomberg, who lacks mouth-ear coordination, his own ears don't hear what his mouth says, when on the one hand he would stand there when he was the mayor, screaming, ranting, raving, railing, going berserk. Boy, those prosecutors in the Bronx aren't prosecuting people who trespass into the housing projects. We've got to lock up trespassers. If you trespass, you're a threat. Want to know who you are and why you're here. And if you've snuck into those buildings, if you're on that land and don't belong there, you need to be in jail or else. Okay, I agree. And then in the next breath, he's willing to give the keys to the city to illegal aliens who trespassed on America. The disconnect is startling. It's blatant. It's unbelievable. But it's there, and very few people think about it. The same journalists who jump up and down and scream about police profiling. Oh, my God, the cops profiled. Well, then go to the next story, and it's about politics. And they very blithely talk about how the politicians are seeking to curry favor with various ethnic groups so they can get the Latino vote, the black vote, or the Jewish vote. Of course, the vote that supposedly is the most sought after right now is the mythical Latino vote. So, in other words, anybody out there whose last name is Garcia, Rodriguez, whatever, you all think alike. You all want the same things because every Latino is the same. Is that not a disgusting, insidious, despicable form of profiling? Of course it is. Nobody calls them out. Nobody ever says, wait a minute. What do you mean the Latino vote? You mean every Latino eats the same food, wears the same clothing, wants the same job and measures success and values the same way? Really? Does anybody really believe that? Every Jew out there thinks the same way, you know? If your last name is Goldstein, well, that's all we need to know, Schwartz, Goldstein, or in my case, Cutler. We all think the same way? Really? And if you're black, well, of course, all blacks are the same, right? But that's what they're saying. And nobody ever calls them out. Nobody ever says, hey, wait a minute. Wait just one damn minute. There are differences within every race, religion, ethnicity. We're not all the same. We are individuals. No, nobody says it. The journalists, so-called, who scream about police profiling, engage in journalist and political profiling, and that's considered to be reasonable. Holy smoke. Holy smoke. What in the world is going on? I listened to Geraldo Rivera this morning on Fox and Friends. And I got to tell you, this guy's head is screwed on sideways and upside down, and he gets credibility and more airtime than any three people I know, and I don't understand it. He came on today, and I was listening in a state of befuddlement. And he was talking about how there is no credible evidence that any terrorists have ever crossed the border from Mexico into the United States. And he went on and talked about how the Mexican government would have no tolerance for any radical Muslims, that there are very few, if any, Muslims living in Mexico. But the problem comes from Canada, and he referred to it, I believe, as the white border with Canada, the white border. Wow. You know, for years I have been talking about a country of 50 border states. I've talked about the northern as well as the southern border. But that wasn't what you heard from Geraldo today. Geraldo said that the Americans want the border with Mexico, but don't give a damn what comes across the Canadian border. It was an obvious implication by Geraldo that the people who want immigration enforcement are doing it based on race. What a pack of malarkey. What a pack of lies. What a false accusation. But there's Geraldo making that statement, saying there's no credible evidence, and the Mexicans would deal with ISIS, and we shouldn't even worry because they would take care of the problem. Really? You mean the tactics that have been adopted by the cartels that are right out of the terror playbooks, the beheadings, the body mutilations, the IEDs, improvised explosive devices, blowing up cars? The Mexicans are going to take care of the terrorists. There's no Muslims living in Mexico. Really? I read a study several years ago that said there were at least 6 million Islamists living in Mexico. And let's be clear about something, very clear, crystal clear. I don't care what your religion is. There are many people who are Islamists, Muslims, pose no threat to anybody. Muhammad Ali is a great example. I had the privilege of meeting Muhammad Ali when he was the champ. Great American, true gentleman. We're talking about a very small group of people. Problem that we have is that too many people within that same community won't step forward. So I think a lot of people get tarred with the same brush. And we do need to be very concerned about those who subscribe to the extreme view of Islam. And I know some people may disagree, and that's fine. This is America. We're entitled to disagree. I am worried about the extremists. I'm worried about the wackaloons who want to impose their religion on everybody else. That's a problem. I don't care what your belief is, as long as you don't use it as justification to hurt, harass, denigrate, mistreat, abuse, discriminate against other human beings. I don't care if you believe that you need to meditate while standing on your head. Just keep the noise down at night. I like to try to sleep. But there are an estimated 6 million or more Muslims living in Latin America. So when Geraldo says there's nobody of the Muslim faith in Mexico, I mean, give me a break. And nobody challenged him. No problems coming from Latin America. No evidence that we've ever had people crossing the border who pose a threat. Well, wait a minute, Geraldo. We've had people sneak into the United States. They have found the prayer rugs. They have found the Korans. We know there are terror training camps in the tri-border region of Brazil. Hamas, Hezbollah, Al-Qaeda, likely ISIS as well now that it's a new fashionable in-group of sociopaths, thugs, and wackies. But they're in Brazil, the tri-border region, where it abuts with Argentina and Paraguay. We know there are Iranian shock troops flying into Caracas, Venezuela, every week. So I don't know what in the world Geraldo is talking about. But they were pretty much rubber-stamping what he said, agreeing, and I'm on Fox and Friends a lot, and they're a nice bunch of folks, and I think they're trying to get the right information out there. But Geraldo is making these statements, and I'm going to suspect that perhaps they weren't aware of what was really going on to the extent that I know about it because of what I've done with the majority of my adult life. But to know that there are terror training camps in Latin America should make it crystal clear that southern border is very critical for national security, along with other means of entering the United States. The story came out this week that 58,000 or 56,000 students had gone missing in the United States, 6,000 of whom, according to the ABC News report, are defined by the Department of Homeland Security as being of particular concern. I wonder what the qualification is for a missing student to be on that list of those of particular concern. But so Geraldo went on about this whole business, and said, well, I was a wartime correspondent. That sounds dramatic. I remember Geraldo doing some things he shouldn't have done about divulging his position and being sent home, if I'm not mistaken. And if you're listening, Geraldo, in that unlikely event, you know, feel free to tell me I'm wrong. But I don't know what having been embedded with a group of soldiers in the Middle East does to qualify you as an expert on what's going on in Latin America or in counterterrorism. I have no idea. You know, I have a personal policy that if I'm going to go on a program to talk about a topic, it has to be a topic I'm well-grounded in, or I don't talk about it. I don't go out and offer opinions about military options. I was never in the armed forces, never. So it would be kind of silly for me to go out there and start talking about military strategy. My friend Paul Vallely, retired two-star general, Major General Vallely, he's an expert, absolutely, unquestionable. And in fact, when questions come up, I'm happy to call him up and get his opinion, get his insight, because he's an expert. But when we talk about immigration, that is my wheelhouse. That is my area of expertise. That is why I've done the congressional hearings, why I was requested by the 9/11 Commission to supply them with written testimony. And I was interviewed by one of their counsels at the time and her assistant because they realized that I had some background in the issue that was worth considering in formulating policies to protect us from terrorism. And the issue that we were looking at is immigration. And then Geraldo, with his infinite wealth of experience, who, by the way, 20-odd years ago, ran a series of programs called The Sons of Scarface, and his focus was Asian organized crime, that people coming from China were a threat. But as soon as we talk about Mexico, Geraldo gets soft and mushy. I remember when the Tsarnaev brothers attacked the Boston Marathon. He was on Fox and Friends. And he made a statement that I'm paraphrasing, and if I'm getting it a little bit wrong, okay, I admit it. But to the best of my recollection, he had made the statement we need comprehensive reform, and he was concerned that because of what those Russian thugs had done, and by the way, his ancestry, at least on one side of the family, is similar to my own. My dad's parents and family came from Russia and Romania. My mother was born in Poland. I'm of Eastern European descent. And I agree that the Tsarnaevs were thugs and crazies and terrorists. But Geraldo's point was, well, I hope what those Russian bums did won't make people stop helping the kids from Mexico who hop the line. I mean, it's like jumping rope, hopping the line. I think that was the term he used. Let's be perfectly clear about the reason the country has borders. Borders are our first and last line of defense. Defense against transnational criminals, international terrorists, America's enemies. That's what borders are, wherever you find them. Furthermore, most borders, if you look into the history of them, were not painted with chalk or crayon or magic marker. They were painted with blood. Most borders are decided upon after armed conflict where lots of people die or get wounded and or get wounded. This isn't minor. The open borders crowd referred to borders as imaginary lines. Oh, just some imaginary line doesn't really have any consequence. Imaginary. Well, tell that to the North Koreans and the South Koreans. Tell that to Hamas and what they do with Israel, digging tunnels under that border. And to the wealthy members of the Hollywood establishment who talk about borders as being imaginary lines when they buy their gazillion-dollar mansions, And the bank comes out and they send out a surveyor to check the property lines before they give the money to buy those fancy houses. I wonder if they think the property lines are imaginary. It's these glib little remarks that no one pays attention to, but it impacts the nature of the conversation. And so today, Geraldo made the statement, incredibly, that we must never confuse the war on terror with immigration. This has nothing to do with comprehensive reform. And Brian Kilmeade, nice guy, agreed with him. Well, I disagree, gentlemen. I disagree, and I could not disagree more. And in fact, the 9/11 Commission could not disagree more because it was by gaming the immigration system that the terrorists were able to enter the United States and attack us. I mean, that's what's so crazy. Let me read to you how the 9/11 Commission's staff report on terrorist travel starts out. And I've read this before. I'm reading it again. I can almost say this like a pledge of allegiance every time I go on a program somewhere, because we have to counteract the nonsense that we're hearing from all too many people. I've sat in a congressional hearings. I've had members of Congress say, oh, immigration has nothing to do with the war on terror. I want them to do their homework. And we're going to get to a president not doing his homework, and I'm going to guess there's a lot of members of Congress who aren't doing their homework either. Required reading, boys and girls of the Congress, required reading, boys and girls of DHS and the administration and Mr. Obama, is the 9/11 Commission report and the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. That report wasn't issued so that you could wrap dead fish with it when you had nothing else to use. The report was issued the same way that a commission was convened after Space Shuttle Columbia and Space Shuttle Challenger were lost so that the same mistakes wouldn't be repeated. The same way that they write reports when airplanes crash so that we can make certain that we do everything reasonable to keep the same mistakes from happening repeatedly. So let's start out with the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel, in case anybody thinks immigration had nothing to do with it. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Border security, a component of national security. What a novel thought, and one that the administration denies, one that most members of Congress deny to a point, and we'll get to that point. You're going to be surprised what they think border security is, by the way. I know what I think border security means. But here's where we get to immigration itself, the way we take care of processing applications and so forth. You know, the news always likes a dramatic image. So it's great when they have that image of the illegal alien hopping the fence, or they can show a tunnel, or they show someone stowing away on a ship. Part of the damage that's really done is when we give citizenship and green cards and political asylum to aliens, as we saw with the Tsarnaev brothers, as we saw in 1993 with Kansi shooting up the CIA, and a month later the first attack at the World Trade Center, and of course 9/11. And there have been others. Faisal Shahzad, the Times Square bomber, became a naturalized citizen a year before the attack. But immigration had nothing to do with it, of course. Here is a couple of sentences to be found on page 98 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. See, I'm very specific. I'm not just going to spout nonsense the way we hear all too often. This is fact. This is in the 9/11 Commission staff report. This is an official government report. Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, think about the Dreamers, think about amnesty, right? Or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Is there any ambiguity to this? Is there any ambiguity? Is there any confusion as to the role that immigration played in 9/11 attacks or on other occasions? And in fact, if you want to look at other occasions, let's go to page 47 of that same 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. Immigration has nothing to do with terrorism? Really? Immigration fraud was the embedding tactic of choice for the great majority of terrorists who've been in the country, in addition to the 9/11 hijackers. But we're hearing immigration had nothing to do with it. It's a lie. Their noses are growing. Send them to a plastic surgeon to have their noses cut down to size. It goes on and says, let me read the first sentence again, and then we will move on. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Worker Program after falsely claiming that he picked beans in Florida. Mahmoud Salameh, who rented the truck used in the bombing, overstayed his tourist visa. He then applied for permanent residency under the Agriculture Worker Program, but was rejected. Ayad Muhammad Ismail, who drove the van containing the bomb, took English language classes at Wichita State College in Kansas on a student visa. After he dropped out, he remained in the United States out of status. Immigration had nothing to do with this? Really? Wow. That's like saying that there was a flood in a particular city, and it rained for 4 days, but the rain had nothing to do with the flood. I mean, give me a break. So we're told by, you know, all these people, the politicians, we heard it from Geraldo again today, immigration has nothing to do with terrorism. That is a lie. So either the people saying it are fools or liars. They have a choice. Which one? You can't be both. Well, maybe it could be a foolish liar. That's a possibility. So let's say they're foolish liars. Got to deal with the facts. We have to understand how we are really vulnerable if we're going to fix the problem. The first step in problem solving is fixing the problem. Identifying the problem comes before fixing the problem. If you're not willing to accept that immigration was a problem that contributed mightily, made the terrorist attacks possible, then you're not going to be able to protect us. Let's get back to basics. Let's look at root causes. Let's look at root causes. If you have a pipe that springs a leak, you know, you can mop all you want all day, and all you got to keep on doing is mopping. The smart thing to do is to fix the leaky pipe. You go to the root cause, then you don't have to keep mopping. If you're worried about terrorism, try to keep them out of the country. Try to identify them when they're here. And this issue about this student is important. ABC News earlier this week reported the 58,000 students missing, 6,000 of whom were of particular interest, God only knows why. There are 9,000 schools in the United States authorized to petition the U.S. government to allow foreign students to come here, 9,000 schools. We have 7,000 immigration agents doing a whole bunch of different jobs, including customs work. At least half the agents, in fact, are doing customs work. So we're probably down to about 3,000 agents doing immigration work. We have 1 million foreign students in the United States, and the schools are on the honor system to report these students to us. We don't even know if the schools exist on anything but paper, and with a relative handful of agents who could be tasked with going out there, how long do you think it would take for maybe, I don't know if they're not even doing it, I'm sure they're not, but let's say you had 25 agents. How long would it take 25 agents to physically go to a school and make sure it even exists? I mean, this is crazy stuff. and 1 million foreign students. And then last year there was a report that said that 1 million aliens in general who came on temporary visas had gone missing. And this is the headline, July 30th, 2013. The Washington Times published the report, and this is the title, Homeland Security Loses Track of 1 Million Foreigners. Report could hurt immigration deal. And the Washington Times is a great organization. But I just thought the headline was kind of interesting. The report could hurt the immigration deal. The report, well, let me tell you, could hurt national security. Not the report, but the information contained in there was reporting on a national security nightmare. 1 million people got lost somewhere along the way. My, oh, my, who's going to find them? Who's going to look for them? 1 million. And look at what just 19 terrorists did to us. During the Second World War, the FBI, working with the Coast Guard, grabbed about a dozen Nazis who came ashore in both Long Island and Florida from U-boats, and they were here to conduct sabotage against us. It was a big story. They still report it on the FBI website. And what was so amazing about it was that within a matter of just a couple of months at most of these thugs, criminals, whatever, you know, enemy, were found guilty and executed, and two or three of them were put in jail for life, and one guy got 30 years. I mean, this was serious stuff. So even if 1% of 1 million are bad guys, that's a number to be reckoned with when you look at what just 19 terrorists did to us on 9/11. But, of course, terrorism has nothing to do with immigration, right? You know, it is stupefying, folks. It's truly stupefying. So we have this problem with the students, and you think, well, maybe this is a new problem. Well, March of 2002, I was called by the House Judiciary Committee to testify before the House Subcommittee on Immigration and Border Security because, to everybody's shock and horror, 6 months to the day after 9/11, it was discovered that two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, had been granted authorization to attend flight school in the United States. Think about that. And what's so astonishing was, if you watch the hearing, and you can, it's permanently posted on C-SPAN. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, or put in Michael Cutler C-SPAN videos in Google. You'll find it. Watch the hearing. Geekus was the chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee. Immigration Commissioner at the time was Ziegler. Listen to what they had to say, what they were going to do, how soon it was going to be done. Geekus went on and on and on. It's unfathomable, the whole world, you had to have been dead not to know. These people were dead, they were terrorists. Every human being on the planet knew who they were. And he goes on about how this must never be permitted, that if anybody comes into the United States, we're going to track them, we're going to know who they are, where they go, and if they fail to do what they're supposed to do, we're going to hunt them down. Really? Sounds so good. I wish that it was true. But, you know, hope is not a strategy. So we have this great hearing, and you should watch it. It's a two-hour hearing, and you listen to Ziegler. By this date, we're going to accomplish this goal, and by that date, we're going to accomplish that goal, and by another date, we've got this other goal. Nothing done. Nothing done. In 2006 or 2007, the Washington Post reported on how Citizenship and Immigration Services, amazingly, claimed to have lost 111,000 immigration files relating to applications filed by aliens seeking all sorts of immigration benefits. For clarity, an immigration benefit isn't like welfare, but it's like getting permission to go to school. It's getting political asylum. It's being granted a green card, lawful immigrant status. It's naturalizing. Those are immigration benefits. 111,000 files relating to such applications couldn't be found. Oops, we lost them. And guess what? Of those applications, 30,000 were for U.S. citizenship. 30,000 to confer the highest honor a country can bestow upon a foreign national. 30,000 applicants for the key to America's front door. And guess what? the adjudicators acted on those cases without the files. Do you want to talk about flying blind? But look at the Dreamers today. Here we are again, and the Dreamers have over a 95% approval rate. And these are people, and I know Obama said they're young people and they're children. The age cutoff is 31. 95% or better approval rate. No face-to-face interview. No field investigations being conducted. And it takes just minutes for an adjudicator to approve the application and hours, days, weeks to deny one. So guess what's happening? They're rubber stamping the applications, and go back to what I just said about immigration benefits, the embedding tactic of choice. So we've got 6,000 students wandering around the United States at the very least, and God knows maybe some others of those that have gone missing also mean us ill, and all's right with the world. And if you listen to the people in the high-tech industries, and if you listen to the university folks, they're happier than pigs in you-know-what. I had a discussion with a young man when I was in the green room, and he's a computer guy. He has his own company, telling me, oh, Americans can't do this stuff. You know, we need to bring in foreign workers, multicultural, from all over the world because, you know. And I said, wait a minute. We had this conversation. I was waiting to go on to talk to Neil. He was there to talk about a computer issue. And I said to this guy, you know, if you go into the tough neighborhoods and you see children living in Harlem and the South Bronx and East New York, Brooklyn, these are tough neighborhoods. You have rats running through the buildings, not mice, but rats. These kids sleep with bugs crawling all over them. They go to bed hungry at night. There's no heat in the wintertime. There's no air conditioning in the summertime. I mean, it's pretty bleak. I said, but because you're living in poverty doesn't mean you're stupid, doesn't mean you're ignorant, doesn't mean you're incapable, doesn't mean you don't have dreams and hopes and aspirations. In fact, perhaps a child living under those circumstances has perhaps the brightest fire burning in his belly to get somewhere, to get the hell out of that hellhole, that hellish existence. I said, why aren't we concerned about helping those children? And, I mean, you had to see the contempt in the eyes of this guy. And he said, those kids are going to learn to write code? Are you serious? I could have decked him. We're accused of discriminatory thoughts and practices for wanting the immigration laws enforced, which, by the way, have nothing, absolutely zero, to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. And here is a snotty kid, basically, who has a computer company, telling me, oh, don't look in the ghetto for programmers. And I want to know why the hell not. And then I told him about a program that Zuckerberg of Facebook fame had. It was called the Hackathon, where they would teach and mentor kids in how to write computer code. And the prerequisite, and you won't believe this, sit down and put on your seatbelt, ladies and gentlemen, the prerequisite for being involved in that program was you had to be an illegal alien. And this guy said to me, oh, no, that's not the case. You just had to be a foreigner. I said, well, you're wrong, but even if you're right, why would you offer an invaluable opportunity like that to somebody who's not a citizen and purposely leave citizens out? If you're a citizen, you need not apply. He had no answer. I said, why wouldn't you say to kids, come down and here's an opportunity to get out of poverty? Because children living in that kind of grinding poverty, very often broken homes, very often seeing violence playing out on the streets every day, very often not having anyone take an interest in them, which is why you have such strong gang problems in those communities. Because, you know, dogs travel in packs, cattle travel in herds, fish travel in schools. Humans are supposed to travel in families when we're young. And if you don't have a family, you create surrogate families, which are what the gangs are. So if you want to break that cycle of violence and despair, you provide legitimate damn opportunities. I said, why aren't we doing it? And he shrugged his shoulders. I said, I got another question. Why wasn't that opportunity provided to returning GIs, men and women, who served overseas, put their lives on the line to protect this guy's sorry ass, and not open an invitation to them. Maybe they're missing a limb. Maybe they lost a leg. Maybe they're blind in one eye. Maybe they suffered some terrible burns, whatever. Imagine if you could take somebody like that and give them that sort of an opportunity to build themselves up, to have a mission in life, to make good money for themselves and their families, and to help to put the horrific injuries they've suffered behind them. My goodness gracious, if you want to talk about the dignity of work and the dignity of achievement, imagine there's a wonderful Yiddish word, mitzvah, which means a truly good deed. That, folks, would be the ultimate mitzvah, to take either a child who's suffering poverty because he's from a dysfunctional family or a soldier who is sacrificed for us in combat and then open up doors to them that they never even knew existed. What a phenomenal thing that would have been. And this guy just looked at me and said, we need to bring in the foreigners. It was an abject hatred for his fellow Americans. Unbelievable. And he said, would you have kept out Einstein? I said, no. Not only wouldn't I have kept out Einstein, I'm happy that we brought in Elon Musk. He said, really? I said, yeah. But when you're talking about bringing in hundreds of thousands of foreign workers, don't tell me they're exceptional. That is a contradiction of what the word exceptional means. And he actually went on and told me that where political asylum was concerned, we shouldn't be scrutinizing the documents. We shouldn't be scrutinizing their applications. You heard what the 9/11 Commission had to say. And when I heard that, to be very honest, I just got up and walked out. It was pointless. Having this conversation continue would be like having an argument with a squirrel. Actually, I think I would have enjoyed talking to a squirrel better. But this guy's not alone. This guy's not by himself in that. The people of Silicon Valley that are running the show look down their nose at Americans. If they could make every American worker disappear, they would. Because Americans actually expect a living wage for their efforts. Americans expect to be treated fairly. They want to bring people from third world countries who will lick their shoes, and if they give them a cup of coffee, they will think that they've been treated like royalty. This is the betrayal of America. I spoke to a former ombudsman for immigration who said to me that I was old school. Because imagine the chutzpah, the nerve that I had, when I said to this guy, in order for America to do well, Americans must do well. And he said, there's no connection. I suggest that he read the Gettysburg Address. I'm sure he had no idea what I was talking about. But it was towards the end of that amazing speech by Abraham Lincoln, where he talked about a country of the people, by the people, and for the people. Certainly, President Lincoln understood that America and Americans are inextricably linked. We're intertwined. And here you have a guy who had worked for immigration telling me that that concept is old hat, old school. Americans don't need to do well as long as America does well, and in particular, American companies do well. You know, there's always room for more oarsmen on a slave ship. This is what we are up against, folks. And so if you try to say anything, the immediate accusation is you're a nativist. The immediate accusation is that you're a bad person, that you're a hater. The violence perpetrated by transnational criminals is generally greatest within the immigrant communities. Now, how do I know that? Well, I spent 30 years working for the INS, 26 of those years as an agent out on the street. When we raided the hooker houses, many of the girls were forced into prostitution, and most of the clientele were illegal aliens who had left their girlfriends behind and were here, you know, on Friday nights in particular. So we would raid the hooker houses on Friday night, whether it was Chinatown, whether it was the Russian communities, whether it was the Dominican communities, didn't matter. Didn't matter. The Mexican communities, every race, every religion, every ethnicity, there we go. Human nature is human nature is human nature. Good, bad, and ugly in everybody, every group. And it was kind of funny, because we used to gain control of the buzzer that buzzed the Johns in, the clientele, if you will, in. So the joke we had, of course, was that those nights when we were doing this, lots of guys got screwed, but nobody had sex. So that was our gallows humor. And when you have the bad guys going to people minding their own business in those communities and telling them that they want their cooperation or else, the threat is, if you don't cooperate, we will find your family, whether it's back home in Guadalajara in Mexico or Moscow or Beijing or Kingston, Jamaica. It doesn't matter. The tactic is the same. So you have people in those communities being coerced into doing the bidding of the thugs. Up in Washington Heights here in New York City, we had Dominican drug gangs go up to some elderly couple that's living on Social Security and say to them, look, here's a couple $1,000. We need your apartment. You have till tomorrow at 12 noon to vacate. You give me the keys, and we'll call you when you can come back. Or you'll come back 3 days from now. Take the money. If you don't take the money, your daughter is going to be dead. Your son's going to be dead. We're going to come back and kill you. Whatever. So they would take control of the apartment. And the reason they did it is they'd go from apartment to apartment to apartment selling narcotics. And because they kept hopping from place to place to place, there wasn't a pattern where law enforcement could readily catch up with them. Eventually we did, but it took some time. But meanwhile, imagine some guy knocking on your door, folks, and saying to you in a menacing voice, here's $2,000, disappear for 3 days, or disappear forever. This isn't a bad movie. This is life in the Big Apple. This is what we are dealing with as a matter of routine. It's permeating our culture and our society. Our politicians tell us, oh, they're worried about crime. Yeah, right. They tell us violence is a problem. So you had all these gun laws come out in the wake of those terrible shootings. And we could have that discussion on another day. But do you really think limiting the number of bullets that people put in their firearms is going to change the equation? You mean the guy with a 10-round magazine is less of a threat than a guy with a 13-round magazine? Do you really think that a drug dealer or a crazy person or a terrorist is sitting in the house before he puts that gun in his pocket and counts out the bullets and says, oops, I can only have 10 bullets, or in New York City, I can only have 7 bullets? No, they're not doing that. They go out there with hand grenades, for God's sakes. We've taken hand grenades out of houses in New York from the drug dealers. Those rules don't affect them one iota because they can't carry a gun legally in the first place. What difference does any of this make to them? It's a game. It sounds good. It smells good. It's a good headline. It's bunk. You want to go after the violence? Go after the drugs. Go after the gangs. You want to go after the drugs? Seal the damn border off. And now we get to what passes for border security. If you look at the act that they were looking at in the Senate, and they were fighting over border security, their fights are no different from tag team wrestling from when I was a kid. And for those of you old enough to remember Buddy Rogers and Haystacks Calhoun and Antonina Rocca and all the others, it was all a big show. It was all a big joke. Of course, we didn't know it. It looked for real. You know, they ran each other into that turnbuckle in the ring, and suddenly it looked like they were bleeding from the head, and it was probably ketchup or God knows what crap they put on their heads. But I'd go to sleep as a kid really worked up that one of my favorite wrestlers had been injured. It was all for show. So they have this debate, and what's the debate about? The debate is about whether or not we're going to have border security. And what do we talk about when we talk about border security? 90% operational control over high traffic areas. Who but a bunch of crazy congressmen could come up with a term like that? 90% operational control of the high traffic areas with a significant reduction in drug trafficking. What in the world is significant? What's operational control, and what's a high traffic area, and what happens when the action moves from one place on the border to the other when they see some Border Patrol agents? And then they said they would wait 5 years to evaluate the efficacy of the program. 5 years. We have a war on terror. we have the 13th anniversary of 9/11 coming up. It's more than 21 years since the terror attacks of 93. 21 years, a whole generation. 21 years. Where were you 21 years ago? I mean, this stuff is stupefying, folks. And they're talking about in 5 years. It took us 44 months to win the Second World War. And this is the argument over border security. 90% operational control over the high traffic areas. Do you know what I think border control is? A mouse can't get across the damn border. That's real border security. 90% of what? Why don't they have a debate about how many angels can dance on the head of a pin, even as Americans are being killed by drug dealers and people who are involved in the drug trade? Most of the violent crime in America today is directly or indirectly linked to the drug trade. If you're serious about the war on drugs, seal the damn border. Is it really that hard? Really? How much money have we poured into this thing? You know, the Secure Border Initiative Network, SBI Net. Wow, the virtual fence is what it was called. I remember being on with Lou Dobbs years ago when this was in the works, and Lou Dobbs, in that inimitable Lou Dobbs voice, said to me, "Mike Cutler, what do you think of the virtual fence?" I said, "Lou, it will do precisely what it's supposed to do, cost a ton of money and stop virtually nobody. That's the virtual fence." So we hear all this nonsense. We hear Geraldo complaining that no one's talking about sealing the Canadian border. You know, let me tell you, it's a distraction. It's a circus. We need to do all of those things. And yes, you can't make those borders airtight. So the solution is to have interior enforcement so that if someone gets past the Border Patrol or someone gets admitted into the United States through the legal process and you know that they violate the law, whatever, you need a bunch of agents from within the interior to do interior enforcement. New York City is still, even with this idiot mayor we have, the safest big city in America because we have a small army of police, nearly 40,000 cops. Would that we had 40,000 immigration agents and enough judges and enough jail space and enough of everything to do the job. And we need to do it. And what people don't even realize, when you look at that surge of the unaccompanied minors across the southern border, there's another reason why I believe the Obama administration was happy for this to happen. And this is something you're not going to hear in too many places. Those unaccompanied minors were given the priority in the immigration court because we're being compassionate. Well, there's only, I believe, fewer than 300 immigration judges and hundreds of thousands of cases currently on the calendar. What this did was bump the cases that were already in the works behind the unaccompanied minors. So those aliens, including aliens with criminal histories, were essentially given a stay on their deportation from the United States. That's another one of the, and I would not say unintended, but knowing this administration, intended consequences. How do we throw a big, juicy monkey wrench in the works? See, if a chain is as strong as its weakest link, the court is most definitely a link. And if you could bring the immigration court to a grinding stop, then you could stop the deportation of illegal aliens, including criminals. And let's remember, I wrote an article for CAPS. It should be published shortly, about how the president intentionally ordered criminal aliens released. Some of them supposedly couldn't be released because of a court decision that says you can't hold somebody more than 6 months simply to deport them, but there's a caveat. And the caveat is that unless the person poses a threat to public safety because he or she is crazy, has a propensity towards extreme violence, and so forth. So the guy that, you know, run somebody over, and they say, well, you know, it was an accident. It's the only time he was ever arrested. We're going to turn him loose. We can't get a travel document, and I'd love to know what efforts were made. I mean, these statements and what goes on raises more questions than they answer. But if they were going to release someone like that, it's different than the guy that raped five different women. Because if the guy raped five different women and you turn them loose, guess what's likely to happen? 6 and 7 and 8 and number 9 and number 10 and so forth are going to get raped. So the courts have said, if that's the case, you don't have to release them. And I doubt very much that this administration is following those instructions. And I'd love to know what they did to actually convince the home countries of these aliens that these are their citizens. I'd like to know what efforts are made to truly identify these aliens. We have a government that is undermining public safety and national security, even as our expectations of privacy and freedom are getting flushed down the toilet. And, of course, flushed down the toilet in the name of national security. You can't make this stuff up. Really, you can't make this stuff up. But, you know, if you look at these issues, if you look at the things that have happened, it's absolutely beyond belief. And by the way, here's something else, and this goes to Mr. Geraldo Rivera, because he is my pincushion for the day. Peter King had a hearing back in 2012. On March 21st, 2012, the Huffington Post published an article, and here's the article. It's a quote. Peter King, Iran may have hundreds of Hezbollah agents in the United States. Now think about that. The title of the hearing that Peter King held was called Iran, Hezbollah, and the Threat to the Homeland. Well, think about that. So this is how the Huffington Post article began. Iranian-backed Hezbollah agents, not al-Qaeda operatives, may pose the greatest threat on U.S. soil as tensions over Iran's suspected nuclear weapons program ratchet up, according to the Republican chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security. Quote, as Iran moves closer to nuclear weapons and there's an increasing concern over the war between Iran and Israel, we must also focus on Iran's secret operatives and their number one terrorist proxy force, Hezbollah, which we know is in America, said Representative Peter King at a Wednesday hearing of his committee. The hearing, which featured former government officials and the Director of Intelligence Analysis for the New York Police Department, follows a foiled goal or foiled plot to assassinate the Saudi ambassador in Washington. And we talked about that. And if they're here, most likely, how did they get here? By running the Mexican border. But, of course, Geraldo proclaimed that that border is not a problem. You know, it's time that the people that went on TV and talked about issues like this either had the credentials and the facts to back up their statements, or they need to zip their mouths. It makes no sense to have people out there providing perspectives that paint an entirely inappropriate and wrong picture. It's called the news. The purpose for having the news is so that you know what's going on. When a program has somebody on who makes statements that don't square with reality, nobody's best interests are being served. Peter King was clear on his concern about Hezbollah. I echo it. I just find it astonishing. We are living in a very dangerous era. I'm expected to be flying to South Carolina. In fact, I am flying to South Carolina Sunday. I'll be doing a town hall meeting at Conway, South Carolina, just outside Myrtle Beach, Monday night. It should be exciting. I'm going to be with Armstrong Williams. It'll be a televised town hall meeting. I'll be back in town on Tuesday. Wednesday, I'm scheduled to be on with Armstrong for a full hour on his Sirius XM radio program, and we plan to have me on for 1 hour a week starting this coming Wednesday. And I will be free to bring on guests and pick the topics. And I think what we're going to do is look at 9/11, look back. Look at where we were, where we are, what risks we're facing. On Thursday, One American News Network has asked me to join them with Graham Ledger on the Daily Ledger to share my recollections, my concerns, my perspectives on the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001. Let's stay focused. This isn't a minor issue. We're not looking at trivia. This isn't about discriminating. It's not about nativism. Quite the contrary. And when you are out there, folks, and you are accused of being anti-immigrant, let's get some language straightened out. Our opponents on this issue of border security and immigration enforcement are not, I repeat, are not, big capital letters, N-O-T, they are not pro-immigrant. I've actually had some people on our side of the argument say, well, I was debating this guy who was pro-immigrant. That's nuts. They're not pro-immigrant. They are anarchists. They want immigration anarchy. That's what they want. You know, in the abortion debate, one side is identified as pro-choice, the other is pro-life. If you are described as being anti-anything, you have a problem. Unless someone's using the Caribbean or British term auntie, which means that you're a female relative of the child of a sibling, you know, then you're an auntie. That's the only time anti is a label worth having. But to be deemed anti-immigrant paints a wrong picture and creates a problem. This is about being pro-enforcement, pro-enforcement. And the laws that we want to see enforced not only tell us who to kick out, not only tell us who to keep out, but tell us who we may let in. Last year, over 1 million lawful immigrants, lawful meaning under the law that we favor, the Immigration and Nationality Act, there were over 1 million lawful immigrants admitted into the United States under the aegis of the law we want enforced. Under that same set of laws, the Immigration and Nationality Act, we naturalized over 500,000 new citizens. We admitted tens of millions of non-immigrant visitors. How in the world is it anti-immigrant to support the laws under which immigrants are legally allowed to come to the United States? This is a contradiction in terms and concepts. So let's get past the nonsense. And I know that when people talk about firearms and self-defense, one of the big arguments is about something called stand your ground. It became an issue in Florida. But here's the thing. We need a different kind of stand your ground. It's a stand your ground posture in debate. And what I mean by that is when somebody makes that false accusation, throws down the race card, calls you a nativist, an anti-immigrant, a bigot, whatever. We've heard the words. They're disgusting. Stand your ground. Do not fold like a cheap suit and say, oh, gee, I'm sorry you misunderstood me. They didn't misunderstand you. There was no misunderstanding, folks. This is intentional. It's a tactic of intimidation. It's a tactic of dismissiveness, of contempt. Make it clear that our immigration laws are our first and last line of defense against people who would kill us. They are our line of defense against the drug dealers and all the harm that that does to our society. Those borders and those laws are our last line and first line of defense against foreign workers who would come here and take the jobs Americans desperately need, and then at the end of the day send that money out of our economy doing more damage. Last year, between $125 and $200 billion was wired out of the United States. Take the multiplier effect into account, and what you have is the equivalent impact of the deficit being jacked up by roughly $500 billion, which is the amount that the deficit grows every year. And that's before you look at the cost of educating foreign children, providing health care, the problems with crime, wage suppression of American workers losing jobs, going on unemployment, and all kinds of safety net programs and no longer paying taxes, and Americans losing their disposable income, so that they are no longer consumers, further dragging down the economy. So we hear this nonsense, we need comprehensive reform, that's a lie. When we're told Congress is in recess and didn't do anything, let me tell you, here's where we're going to throw a bone to Congress. Voting no for against bad legislation is not the same as not doing your job. It's not like voting present, like somebody used to do when he was a member of the Chicago State Legislature. voting no is acting responsibly if the congressman or congresswoman who did that believes that the legislation up for grabs, up on the table for vote, was a bad piece of legislation. The parent who tells the child that the child may not have ice cream until he or she does his homework is not a parent who's failing to do his job. Would you agree? The parent who tells the child no when the child is wrong, that parent deserves kudos. Good going. You're doing your job. You're not buckling in. You're saying, hey, you know what? I'm not letting you get away with it. The members of Congress who voted down comprehensive immigration reform are worthy of everyone's support. That was fatally flawed legislation. Fatally flawed legislation. It wasn't that Congress failed to act. It's that Congress acted to stop a runaway train that would have been disastrous, but that train is not yet off the track, and we need to yank it off the track. That's what this is about, folks. 9/11's coming up. I know my recollections. The ashes landing on my neighborhood, landing on me, in part containing the remains of my neighbors. I can't get it out of my head. I can't get out of my head the fact that 4.5 years before the attacks, I had testified before Congress because we knew the dangers. Can't get it out of my head. We're still not safe. In fact, we're at greater risk today than ever before. I'm asking each and every one of you to try something interesting. I want you to call the House and Senate switchboards. I want you to call your members of Congress, senators, congressmen who represent you, if they're not on the same page with us. I want you to call them 2 or 3 times a day. I want to melt down the switchboard. Let's make all those phone calls, and let's put the pressure on as soon as we start to get near Election Day so that everybody understands that we know what the tactic is, because my concern is that Mr. Obama is probably waiting for the election, win, lose, or draw, so that he could push through an executive action. And by the way, here's something for you to think about. If he waits and then does that, he's waiting because guess what he knows? That what he wants to do is opposed by the great majority of United States citizens. There is no justification for it. It would be a serious act of betrayal. A real man doesn't do that. A real leader doesn't do that. But we know what kind of a leader he is not. Nobody, but nobody, will ever compare or confuse Barack Obama with John F. Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Nobody will confuse him with Dwight Eisenhower. Now, we know who Mr. Obama is. He is a guy, and here is the final story that I will relay to you. Mr. Obama apparently doesn't even take daily briefings, security briefings, intelligence briefings. I was assigned to DEA intelligence back in the late 80s, and I remember we worked on a case involving bomb detonators found in the cars of some Colombian drug dealers. And it was the night of the Al Smith dinner. George Bush Sr. was supposed to debate Mike Dukakis. And what was so amazing was we started working on the investigation. The FBI came in. The intelligence services came in. The investigation went overseas to Colombia. And on it went. And I had to write a chunk of a report that was in an overview on the whole case. And I remember this one day, my bosses came to us and said, we're locking the doors. Nobody goes home. We have to finish this report because at 6 o'clock it's going over to be part of the president's briefing package. And I was a single parent. I had to call the babysitter, tell my babysitter that my 3-year-old son, or perhaps he was 4 years old at that time, was going to have to sleep over because I couldn't come home. He was upset. I was upset for him, but I understood the importance of what we were doing. I can't tell you how professionally satisfying it was knowing that at the end of this whole process, roughly a half page of one of the pages in the briefing report handed to the president was the page that I personally had written. It was an amazing professional high, if you will. I remember driving home as the sun was coming up. And I remember that I couldn't quite fit in my government car. My head was scraping on the roof because I probably gained about 6 to 12 inches because I just felt like $1 million. I was exhausted. It had been a very long day. I think I worked about 20 hours that day. But it was amazing to think that I had written a half page about a really important case that would be read that morning by the President of the United States of America. And now we have a president who, according to reports that have leaked, doesn't even get an in-person briefing. First president, apparently, to take this attitude. He says, send it over electronically, email, I guess Cliff Notes. Is there any wonder he has no plan? Is there any wonder we're in the trouble that we're in? This is a disaster. We need real leaders. We need to pay attention to how bad things are so that when the next guy steps up and says, I want to be your next president, look at Obama, and if the guy or gal is 180% in the opposite direction, that's a good starting point, but only a starting point. We need somebody with leadership, and that doesn't mean a loose cannon, but it does mean somebody who understands how special America is, how important America is, and how Americans are just as special and just as important. My thoughts for this evening. So glad you were able to join me. Always good, as I like to say, to catch up with you. I once again ask you to go visit some websites. Specifically, please go visit capsweb.org. They've got some great articles. Talking about the impact of population growth on California, talking about the environmental issue, the water shortages, talking, though, quite a bit about the national security implications. Truly a good website for you to visit. Visit michaelcutler.net. I'd love for you to check out Front Page Magazine. I have some articles in it that I think will be helpful to you in sorting things out. If you like what you're seeing in these websites, folks, please forward them to your friends and neighbors. Ask them to do the same. I'm trying to create what I've come to call my bucket brigade of truth. Meanwhile, stay safe. Have a wonderful weekend. Take good care of yourselves. Hopefully we'll get through 9/11 peacefully, quietly, safely. Look forward to seeing you again, same time, same place, right here. But remember, folks, please, democracy is not a spectator sport. Good night, everybody.